As a campus and community radio station, CKUT's mandate is to provide an essential service to those in the Montreal community whose needs are not met by mainstream commercial radio. CKUT is radio by and for the community and is produced entirely by volunteers. Opinions expressed on the show you're about to hear do not necessarily reflect the opinions of CKUT at large. If you have feedback about anything you hear on CKUT, please get in touch with us at procom@ckut.ca with the specific feedback and the date and time of the show it's about. That's procom@ckut.ca.
The following is a previously broadcast program.
Welcome to Queer Core on CKUT 90.3 FM, Montreal's only queer culture show that bridges any divide between queer sex and radical queer politics. Due to the fabulous nature of queer experience, tonight's program may contain sexually explicit or coarse language. You've been advised.
From the Advocate magazine, this is LGBTQ and A. I'm Jeffrey Masters, and today I'm talking to Kate Bornstein. We talk mainly about gender, where we're at, where we're going, the future of gender. This is from somebody who's been studying and writing about it for over 30 years. Kate is one of the most prominent non-binary voices in the world, and on a personal note, somebody whose work has been transformative in terms of my own life, how I perceive and experience my own gender. And then please remember to subscribe to the podcast. Subscribe, rank us 5 stars, leave a comment. These are all things that help new people find our show. So big thank you to everyone who's been doing that. And then as always, don't forget to check out our old home at AfterBuzz TV. They're the number one place for all your TV after show discussions. All right, without further ado, here's Kate. So you've been writing about being non-binary for almost 30 years, and rereading your work recently, I'd forgotten that you were not always embraced by the trans and larger LGBTQ community.
I'm still not embraced by the larger LGBT and trans community. I think I'm celebrated by the larger community, and that's great because I'm celebrated as an elder, and I feel very warmly about even people who are upset with me, because you go, aw, isn't that sweet? You know, they're working as hard as they can, and they do not see yet what I've been trying to say for quite a while.
What is that?
That there's more to gender than two.
Oh, I'm really surprised to hear you say that, because I know that for the majority of your career, you're writing about gender being not binary, the spectrum. And for a large part of your career, that was a theory, as we talked about it. But I feel like nowadays we talk about that as fact.
More and more people do talk about gender as a spectrum. But when we get into the notion of a spectrum, then to start with, gender exists in, or existed, in two dimensions. Imagine an XY graph, male and female. Okay, so everything depended somewhere in the plane defined by male and female, including a spectrum, anywhere you want, on male to female. That's still two-dimensional thinking. A third dimension that a whole lot of us, yes, I've got a loud voice, but it was an amazing explosion of people who were going, wait a minute, what about imagination? There's a third dimension of gender, imagination. And this puts gender beyond male and female. And instead of an XY graph, now we've got this kind of globe or cube, whatever shape you want to make it in. And then if you really want to get tricky and talk about gender fluidity, then we're talking four dimensions, because we have to add time. People talk about gender as if it is unchanging over time. But we're always changing our genders. And the problem is when people think that gender is the same all the time for everyone.
And your thinking on that has actually evolved, right? You used to write that everybody was outside of the binary, but it seems like you've changed on that.
Well, I still think that. I think it's paradoxical. Yes, everybody's outside the binary because the binary is a construct. But the truth is, many people are binary identified. That doesn't mean they're not outside the binary. It means they've made the decision to act and live and be in a binary.
Because that is what is comfortable to many people.
Of course. And that I've never had objections to. What I have objections to is that holding sway over people who don't want that.
So what is the argument against you? You've said that you've been denounced over and over by the trans community. You being non-binary is not actually harmful to me. So is the argument that it is harmful towards the larger movement of acceptance for trans people?
This gets back to my loud voice. I take up a lot of space. I'm a known character. And when I say I'm not a woman, somehow people hear that and go, well, Kate Bornstein's not a woman, so what about you? And you go, oh, okay. And this is the way people think. The tall poppy syndrome, it's known as in Australia. What I say is assumed to be true for a whole lot of people, and it's not. And I've tried to make that point that it's not, but that's not heard.
Oh.
So you're spoiling it for the rest of us is a common problem.
Oh.
In any area, it can be a common problem. In race, it can be a common problem. Within a religion. Wait, no. Dalai Lama doesn't speak for all Buddhists. He doesn't say he does. That sort of a thing.
I have to wonder if these arguments against you are coming from the older segment of our population. Because the younger segment, I hear really like confirming everything that you're saying and repeating it back.
I agree. There's a large number of young folks that I just go, oh, baby, I love you so much. You are living the life I've always wanted to live. And yes. These and still there are degrees of that. I think there was a massive millennial survey done by Huffington Post 5-6 years ago. Over 1,000 people were asked questions all over this country. It was an American survey. And they were very careful to go across demographics. And well over 50% of millennials understand gender as a spectrum. And you go, wow. And again, that's wonderful. So yes, and these are people you meet. Remember, the people we meet, the people we hang out with, are not the majority of the people in the world. We've still a long way to go. I think people are understanding the notion of what people now know as transgender a lot better. Oh, you're really a woman. Oh, I get it. Or, oh, you're really a man. I get it. That is gaining traction in the world. And that's really cool. I think the number of people objecting to that are in fact the old farts, you know, my generation, and we'll be dead pretty soon. So that's a good news.
I think too, I think we used to believe the notion that in order to gain public acceptance and to pass laws to protect us, we needed to propagate a single narrative about being trans, about being anything, and that we couldn't complicate narratives because it's unhelpful in that realm. When really, if we don't complicate narratives, we leave people out. And I think trans people know that better than anyone.
You were right up until trans people know that better than everyone.
Okay, tell me why.
Okay, there's an idea that trans is somehow monolithic. It's not. I wish it were. When I was coming out, when I was exploring all this stuff in the 80s, there were transsexuals, and these were people who, these were men, women, boys, girls who had transitioned or were about to transition from one to another gender. There were transvestites, people who dressed up and for various reasons. Enjoyed it, did it for sex, did it in secret, did it on the street and celebrated it. They were transvestites. They were street fairies. You know, there wasn't much else. To be a real transsexual in those days, you needed a medical stamp of approval, which included, okay, you need hormones and surgery. And then you were a real transsexual. Well, in the late 80s, people started adding the qualifier. Are you a post-op transsexual? Are you a non-op transsexual? Are you a pre-op transsexual? And all of a sudden, that got cool. And then the word transsexual was really excluding people. So we used transgender to include anyone who was fucking around with gender at all. And so transgender has been the inclusive term for a long time, until May of 2014, when Time magazine came out with Laverne Cox on the cover and said the transgender tipping point. And I saw that, and I that month is when I finished my chemotherapy for lung cancer. It's all gone now. I'm happy it's all gone. But I'm reading this thing. I'm going, what do you mean transgender tipping point? Because I knew like thousands and thousands of people were nowhere near a tipping point because of their transness. They couldn't get jobs. They were harassed in the street or beat up or killed. That's not anywhere near a tipping point. And then I got it. Transgender had been redefined in the mainstream. Transgender replaced the word transsexual. Because now when most people hear the word transgender, they think, oh, a man, a woman, a boy, a girl has transitioned or about to transition from another gender. Great. The great stride that transgender people in those terms have made is that it is no longer tied to a medical decree. Doesn't need hormones, doesn't need surgery. So we've improved light years from when I was going through this. But there's so many people in the inclusive word is now trans. So many people do not define themselves by any kind of binary, that these people don't fit in the word transgender anymore. And what happens in the transgender community is the T in LGBT is transgender, not trans. Trans now falls in the Q because we add the dimension of imagination and time to our understanding of gender. More than a spectrum, many transgender people understand themselves to be along on a spectrum, but many trans people go, nowhere near that, honey bunny, just nowhere near that.
We're talking about all of these changing words, mm-hmm. and when you were writing, I believe it was in the 90s, Gender Outlaws, you wrote, I'm not a man and I'm not a woman.
Gender Outlaws singular. Gender Outlaws was another book.
Oh, was it?
Yes.
Oh. but you wrote, I'm not a man, I'm not a woman, period. And the sentence stopped. And now we have this word non-binary. Did that word exist back then?
No. We didn't know what to call the system. I think I called it the bipolar gender system. And it wasn't being tongue-in-cheek. It was there was a line. There were two poles to it. But yeah, the only way I could define myself well was by what I was not. I said, I'm not man, not woman. That's me.
And do you still feel more comfortable with saying what you're not? Or are you okay, now okay with this like positive word?
I like the positive word because it also expresses what we are in the negative. It's when we start saying, here's what I am in the positive, that time drops out of the equation because whatever we say we are is gonna change. But whatever we say we're not, that's not gonna change.
Do you remember when you found the word non-binary?
I think that was happening while I was undergoing chemotherapy. And so that's all a fog.
That's pretty recent.
Yes. I wasn't very aware of it for a long time.
It's just amazing that this has all happened in your lifetime.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
It's so gratifying to have been able to be there when a whole lot of us were planting seeds. And it's harvest time.
And while we're talking about language, too, and the evolving perception of gender, our understanding, has your feeling on the word tranny evolved? I know you self-identify as that.
Yeah. I don't insist on it with people. I know that it can be triggering in the old sense of the word trigger, in that people who have been traumatized when they hear the word tranny mixed with the tone anger, or even not, for those of you who are upset by it now, my sincere regret to hear that you've been traumatized.
I think that the unfortunate part is that the origin of the word and what it communicates is beautiful.
Thank you.
Do you mind telling like the story of how the word came to be and like what it means before it was a hate word?
Yeah. The word tranny was coined in the late 70s in Sydney, Australia. When the only work that trans people could get were the drag bars. Nobody would hire trans people. Again, they were transsexuals, transvestites, street fairies, and the only way they could make a living was in the economic matrix that is the drag bar. Butch women would be bartenders and introduce the acts. Street fairies would hand out flyers and get paid for that. And the height would be, you know, the drag queens who would do the actual performing. And then there was a hierarchy in there. But they all got together. And if you remember Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, the animosity of the transsexual and then the drag queen. And then we just, I'm better than you. I'm better than you. And it's been going on for a long time. But what they realized is, yeah, but we're family. And we need a family word. And Australians don't like words longer than two syllables. Australians becomes Aussies. Sunglasses become sunnies. Barbecues become Barbies. And trans people became trannies. It was that simple. And so they were trannies. It was family. That would calm things down and we go, okay, we are family. Okay, great. It's a lot how many, many people use the word trans now.
As this umbrella term.
Yeah, an inclusive term. Now, the wonderful drag queens of the day started moving to the States. Doris Fish in particular in the early 80s. And brought the word with her. And of course, then there were the transvestites and transsexuals and street fairies and everyone, oh yeah, we're all trannies together, and male to female, and butch women and passing women. Yeah, we're all trannies together. And then sex workers, trannies. And this is where it came a cropper, because sex workers and porn spilled over into the cis, which wasn't the word, world, and people were ashamed. Men, particular cis men, were ashamed of their attraction to trannies and tranny porn and tranny sex workers. And so because of their shame and self-loathing, they aimed that word as a hate word. Now, does that mean it is not a hate word today? No, it is a hate word today, and that's what I've come to understand. What I ask is that when trans people hear me use the word tranny, give me the benefit of the doubt. I'm not saying it with hate or anger or disparagingly. And neither are many people, not only of my generation, but younger generation trans people also use the word tranny, especially like within and the animosity between drag queens and trans women, it's still there. That's heartbreaking to me. RuPaul Oh my golly, what a, no, I love RuPaul. And RuPaul calls himself a tranny nigger faggot. And you go, oh, do I love you, baby. RuPaul has the kind of courage I wish I had. And wow on the talent. Does RuPaul make mistakes? Of course, everybody makes mistakes. And okay, again, we're family. Benefit of the doubt, please. So the place where trans is becoming a true or more true melting pot in the public view is in fact RuPaul's Drag Race, because many of the girls, several of the girls, have come out as transgender. And you go, oh, I get it. No, it's not clear yet. It's not one narrative, as you're saying. But they're messing with gender. Drag queens mess with gender and break all kinds of rules of gender. Trans women mess with gender. Even though they are binary identified, one of the cardinal rules of gender is once you've been assigned gender, you cannot change it. So that's breaking a rule of gender. That's being an outlaw in a lot of people's eyes. You're breaking God's rule in many people's eyes. So the fact of law breaking, the breaking of natural laws, is common to both drag queens and trans men and trans women. And I just wish they would go, ah, and give each other a hug.
I know this is unanswerable, but what do you think is next? Where do you think we're going in terms of gender? What is the future of gender?
Queer. The future of gender is its dissolution. The word non-binary is heralding that. To say non-binary gender is oxymoronic, because gender in most people's point of view is the binary. And what is a binary? If you can imagine a circle, like a line, a circle, and everything about gender is inside that circle. Everything. Misogyny, queens, kings, men, women, boys, girls, butchers, femmes, everything is in that circle. Makeup, jock straps, everything is in there. And divide that circle in half. Okay, everything has to be on one side or the other. Nothing can be on both sides of that line. Nothing can be straddling the line. Nothing can go through that line. Nothing can be outside the circle. That's the binary. We don't really think of the binary as anything more than an either or, which is doesn't take into account the matrix of it all, the effect of the binary. Which says don't change. You're not allowed to change. Now, we shatter before we shatter the binary, trying to get through that line and say, wait a minute, you're making more money per hour than I am, is crossing the line. And it's seen as an attack. Any kind of going to the other side is presumed as an attack and an appropriation, and you're taking what's mine. So the nature of the binary is the nature of a battlefield. It can't be anything else. That's all there is. That's what happens when you have either or. Okay, shatter the binary. Well, it can't be done, but we can be done on an individual basis. We go, boop, don't believe in it, and out we go, and I'm non-binary, and all of a sudden, gender is still the circle. Everything about gender is still the circle. But now there's lots of stuff inside. There's a spectrum inside the circle. There are binaries inside the circle. There are men and women. There are butchers and femmes. There's little binaries floating around inside the circle. There's spirals. There's spirals in motion. There's globes. There's all kinds of ways of looking at gender. And these ways of looking at gender can grow in terms of the space they occupy. They can shrink in terms of the space they occupy. But they can move around without being seen as attacking anyone else. And so the nature of this new way of looking at the binary, looking at gender without binary, is any phenomenon defined by two and two only components. What we have now is a polynary. It's a real word, P-O-L-Y-N-A-R-Y. It's a polynary. And a polynary is any phenomenon defined by more than two elements. It's as simple as that. And the nature of a polynary is the nature of a playground. There's a possibility for coalition. There's a possibility for cooperation. There never was that in the binary. Now, I wrote these words in a play called Hidden Agenda, which predated my book, Gender Outlaw. And I said, well, gender is not the battlefield, it's the playground. I was very, very full of myself. And I really didn't know what I was talking about. I knew that gender was a battlefield. And I knew that gender was a playground, but I never really knew the mechanics for that. Now I know that. So I really haven't so much progressed in my thinking. I still think the same way, not man, not woman, but I'm a lot more nuanced in my thinking and a lot more forgiving of people who don't agree with me.
I mean, for me, reading your book as a non-trans person, it caused me to engage with my gender in ways that I never had and didn't know I was allowed to. And so I could be less rigid with my masculinity. I didn't have to follow historical or societal gender norms. And I think that that has to be where we're heading for everyone, too, in terms of the future. And I hope so, at least.
I hope so, too. Sexuality is also headed in that direction. The binary of hetero and homo was broken by bisexual and further broken by pansexual and asexual, and ways of describing sexuality that have nothing to do with gender, BDSM, furries. This is wonderful. This is just a wonderful thing. And these two are coming hand in hand. And I think as soon as people understand pansexuality, polyamory, and non-binary, these concepts are entering the culture very slowly. And what these concepts are, pansexuality, polyamory, and non-binary, are saying neither nor. They're saying there is a polynary. There is a way of looking at the phenomenon of gender and the phenomenon of sexuality as being composed of more than two parts. And that's what's entering the mainstream very, very slowly. And I think if drag queens and trans women and trans men were to heal that wound and model that for the mainstream, that would go a long way in forwarding getting that future closer to hand. Maybe I'd live long enough to see that. That would be hot.
Yeah, and I don't want to keep blaming the older generations, but it was the younger drag queen that spoke out against RuPaul and said, no, we accept trans people. Trans people can be drag queens. And it was good to hear those rebuttals against somebody so beloved as RuPaul.
Yeah, and I RuPaul is coming to see that. There's still, both exist. Drag queen is its own identity. Trans woman is its own identity, and a person can be both. It's not either or, it's and. And that's the idea that I think is the future of gender.
I think to trans people, it's an identity, and drag queen, it's a profession, and we're allowed any profession we want.
No.
No?
No.
You don't think oh.
No, darling.
Tell me.
No, drag queen is an identity and a profession. But what, you know, this is, all right, I've heard the argument, well, they're not really trans because they get to take their makeup off.
But they do gender fuck.
Yes. Have you seen a drag queen out of drag?
Yes.
They're screaming faggots. You know, they're just like, they get picked on and beat up as easily as any trans person. It's not, you know, they don't go, oh, now I've got cis privilege. No, they don't. And please understand that. Now, female impersonators is another question. Yes, they impersonate women. There are beauty contests for that. And part of that contest is when you're out of your female drag, are you a real man? And if you're not, you lose points. Not so with drag. Drag is understood to be an identity, and whether you're wearing it or not. And yes, it's also a job. It's how you make money. Remember going back to what I was saying about Australia. It's the only place you can make a nickel. That's still the case for people who just don't, whose gender expression is never in any way can be binary.
Well, I think that it begins with men who are generally in power, because for women, they're allowed more flexibility in expressing their gender and behaving that way. Mm-hmm. And so it's up to men to begin the change since they're at the top. Does that sound like horrible?
No. It's not up to it. I see what you're saying. It's going to take that. It's also going to take, here's what's never spoken about in terms of gender, the desirability of trans. When you have someone who's mixing the signals, who's going, well, yeah, male and female, all at the same time, masculine and feminine, and that's an attraction, that's a turn on. That's seen as perversion.
Well, I think that goes to what I think is so important about your work, because you do not shy away from writing about sex. And I fear, one of my fears is that because we now know that we cannot talk to a trans person about their private parts in publicly, I worry that it has taken away all sex and sexual desire from all public conversations of trans people.
I want to just a little tweak on that truth of yours you just spoke. You can't speak with a transgender person about their private parts. That degree of respect is part of being transgender nowadays. But you can speak with most trans people about it. You can speak with a tranny about it. You can speak with a drag queen about it if you want to, if they want you to. There's that possibility. They're talking about tucking and untucking all the time. There's a difference. There's straight and gay are also, or straight and queer, excuse me. Straight and queer is a binary that's shifted in its understanding. It used to mean straight, used to mean hetero, and queer used to mean homo. It's way beyond that now. Straight is the conservative wing of sex and gender discourse. Queer is the radical wing of sex and gender discourse. So everybody's got a little of both. What's conservative? Well, don't talk about my private parts. I don't want you to, and I'm not comfortable with it. And don't ask me what I do in my bedroom with my lover. That's none of your fucking business.
Well, I think
right? That's straight.
Yeah.
Queer would be, you want to see my surgery? Oh, my God. And I just got a piercing on the end. Oh, well, you want to see? Or let's do it in the road. You know, those are now two sides of the same coin. And so what you've got, because LGBT is a more conservative movement, they had to add the Q, because LGBT isn't Q. So LGBT is straight. In these new definitions, they are the conservative voice of sex and gender discourse, more or less. And Q, queer, is the radical voice of sex and gender discourse. Neither side is right. Both sides have to hold hands and kiss.
Right. And I guess that in my thinking, in terms of polite conversation, like the more public conversation that we air doesn't involve these queer elements, usually, like the queer conversations.
And that's what I think the future of gender is, that the increasing presence of that conversation as the radical enters the mainstream.
because it's those conversations I have with all of my friends that we have in private. We don't have it publicly usually.
Yeah, okay, that's got to change.
Yeah. Well, I was talking about the future of gender and mentioned what I believe it is, which is the non-trans view. In terms of the future for trans people, I look forward to a future where they can walk down the street safely, where they're not stared at, and where gender ambiguity is not considered anything out of the norm.
Now you're assuming that people can read transgender people all the time.
I'm thinking of more of my non-binary friends and people who are
right.
People who are visibly trans.
Correct. Okay. So you're hoping for a polynary system of gender where it's a playground as opposed to a battlefield.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
And I hope that we're heading there quicker than it's taken us to get to where we are now.
It hasn't taken that long. It's been less than 30 years, my darling. I'm 70. I just turned 70. And in a blink of an eye, Time Magazine was talking about a fucking tipping point. Really? I'm going, holy shit.
See, I read that headline, the tipping point, the transgender tipping point, as being a tipping point about awareness and not acceptance.
Interesting. Okay. Makes more sense that way. It makes more sense that way. But I can tell you this, that transgender people have taken it as acceptance. Okay, now here I am, accept me. That's always been the way of a marginalized group when it becomes visible. I'm human, just like you. This was feminism. Women are people too. Accept me. And there's nothing wrong with that, but that's how it's being taken by trans people is, okay, I've reached the tipping point. Accept me, hire me, give me a job, let me pay the rent. And that's not happening. Let me walk down the street safely without a bullet coming in my head.
Yeah. Going back to sex for a second.
Sure.
You are 70 years old now.
Uh-huh.
How has sex changed for you?
I'm not champing at the bit about it much anymore.
That's a black and white difference from what you wrote in your memoir.
When my memoir stopped before I moved to New York, and that was 20 years ago, my darling. Sex has always been a wonderful, wonderful energy for me, and I've enjoyed playing with sex most all of my life. And I can mark it. I can mark it to the point when I was getting chemotherapy and radiation from 2012 through 2014. Believe me, sex is not the first thing on your mind or even the last thing on your mind. You're thinking, how the fuck can I stay alive till tomorrow? And 2 years of that is basically, it's celibacy. And I've really embraced an asexual stance at this point in my life. I'm going, okay, this is new. And at first I beat myself up for it. I'm a failure. I'm a failure in my relationship because, you know, my girlfriend is all about sex. She teaches sex. She does sex. And we've opened our relationship. And I'm going, okay, all right. I'm pretty fucking happy without it now. Well, this is new. So that's kind of where I'm at right now. I don't think I've ever really come out and said that before.
You seem very at peace with it.
That's taken a while. That's taken years. Yes, but I am.
Has that been as challenging as gender? I guess.
Yes. So much of me was, look how queer I am with sex, you know, fuck and suck and BDSM. And honestly, you know, I think I could probably still do the master-slave thing, but it really doesn't tweak me anymore. And slave was such an integral part of my identity. Oh my God, to be of service. And what I've done is I've now said, okay, I still want to be of service. That's kind of my, that's what underlies every bit of my work. It's just not done in a sexual scene anymore.
Looking at your life, everything that you have done and write about, it has gone against what society tells you is quote unquote normal. So you are very open about how this like slave aspect, being told what to do, excited you to your core. And there can be a stigma against listening to those feelings in you. And I also tie that connection to like a stigma against like gender and, you know, being assigned male and expressing anything differently. And it sounds like you are always just listening to what you want, to your gut.
There's a Buddhist koan. Koan is a Zen teaching story. They usually make no sense at all. Like, what is the sound of one hand clapping is a Zen koan. And you're supposed to think about that one for decades until you figure out how that really makes sense. I'm not going to give you the, there's no answer, but it's a koan people teach. The koan that's got me going, has had me going since the late 80s is this one. The way you do anything is the way you do everything. What the fuck? What? That's the whole koan. And if that's true, then anything I do mindfully is a rehearsal for anything else I want to do mindfully. Anything I do that I find satisfying is a pattern for anything else I might do that I would find satisfying. Sex and orgasm and sexual service and bondage, these were all one, and pain, oh my God. You know, nothing like a single tail whip on your back. It's, that's like exciting. So, all right, how does that translate? A great fucking conversation when someone makes a brilliant fucking point that hurts and is true. You go, oh, okay, now I'm starting to get it. And there's a big difference between sex and sexy. I haven't given up sexy. I like that. That's fun. But with my identity now, all right, for a long, long time, and maybe up till about 6, 7, 8 years ago, I was 6 feet tall. I'm 5'8 now. You know, old people shrink. You know, your spinal column, you know, gets, oh, well, there you go.
That's a lot.
And I've got scoliosis. I know, right? So I'm little comparatively. I see myself as more little. And I'm old. Honey, you know, they, oh, 70 is the new 50. No, it's not. It's 70, darling. And so I'm old. And what I've tried since day one of cross-dressing was to be a lady. This was my mother's favorite identity. I know it's a matter of being gracious in any situation. And I've always tried to be a lady. So I'm little, I'm old, I'm a lady. I'm a little old lady. And this is what I enjoy being nowadays. I love walking down the street. And I put someone just yesterday, went, hey, grandma. I go, hey, baby. This is great. And I can go, young man, might I have that seat? Oh, yes, ma'am. Thank you, dear. And
so that goes back to the playground aspect of gender.
Thank you. You know, people are afraid of getting old, and age and sexuality affects all of us. Oh my God, I'm getting old. I'm not sexy anymore. Maybe not. But there's lots of different ways to be sexy. I mean, I used to wear leopard print skin tight gowns. Honey, if I did that now, you know, who likes seeing cellulite? No, nobody. now I'm dressing all hippie chic, which is how I wanted to be when I was in my late teens and my early 20s. I always wanted to be that cute hippie chick. And to me, that's a kind of a sexy. So you find what you're capable of and you go, okay, I can do this. Old hurts. A great deal of pain in being old, I got to tell you. When I played King Lear in college, I was talking to my director, how do I really play age? I had played a lot of, you know, goofy old men on stage. I was a character. Oh, yes, I can play an old man, an old man. And I didn't want to make it a caricature. How do I play age? And he says, well, and he was like 50-something. He says, imagine this. Every day you wake up, something new hurts. Oh. And you go through the day with these new pains and old pains, and it affects how you move. And you go, oh, okay. All right, I get it. So age hurts, my darling. And with age comes a great deal of loss. Your kitties pass, your dogs pass, your friends pass, your parents, your siblings, and there's a whole lot of goodbye. But the perspective that you have when you're old, talk with pretty much any older person and they'll say, I wouldn't change it. No, 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 not that part. No, no, I love being able to see the world the way I see it now. And I think this whole idea of loss and pain, for me, the way you do anything is the way you do everything. It's rehearsal for that great big moment we all face, and that's death. What could be more painful? What could be what greater loss than the great big fucking goodbye? And I look forward to seeing that mystery. I look forward to being as conscious as I could be, as free from grabbing for life as I can be. My mom, when I was like 14 or 13, told me, she said, Albert, you know, when I go to sleep every night, I try to think of the exact moment I fall asleep. I never can. Always right before I fall asleep, or maybe, oh my goodness, I've been asleep, but never the moment of falling asleep. I think if I could see that moment, I'd have a better idea of what death is. That's never left me. My fascination with death in my earlier years, up until I was 40 or 50, took the form of suicidal thoughts. It took the form of suicidal ideation, took the form of suicide attempts. It was a fascination with death. I'm still fascinated with death, but I'm willing to rehearse for it. And
do you still think about trying to kill yourself?
No, I don't. In 2006, I wrote a book called Hello, Cruel World, 101 Alternatives to Suicide for Teens, Freaks, and Other Outlaws. And that kind of cured me.
It's one of the most realistic views on staying alive that I've seen. Because you say to somebody, if you like cutting and engaging in self-harm, do that if it'll keep you alive. And I think that will make a lot of suicide professionals wince, but it's realistic.
Yes, and I also say, when you're cutting like that, try to learn to do it without anger and self-loathing. My cutting went from anger, frustration, self-loathing to someone else cutting on me in a BDSM scene. And it went into great joy and sexual satisfaction. And, oh, look, I can bleed. You know, that was great. So again, you transform. because everything changes. Remember the fourth dimension of gender, time. Time passes, nothing stays the same. Not a goddamn thing. Everything changes. Your most cherished values shift and change. Your body shifts and change. Your notions of gender change all the time. Our conversation, we've changed each other irrevocably. No? You went, oh, well, you know, I think you tossed it off, you know. Oh, I think that, you know, that the tipping point of gender wasn't so much about acceptance. I went, oh, as it was awareness. And I'm like, well, that's new. Hey, thank you. Did you know that when you learn something new, you grow brain cells?
I did.
Great. And that's why it feels so good to learn something new. You go, woohoo! It's a hoot.
Yeah, I also am fascinated by that our brain can change shape and the different parts of it can grow and shrink depending on what we do, depending on how long we look at our phone, certain different things.
Yeah.
I think it's incredibly inspiring, too, that you dealt with suicidal ideation for so long and you've done so much important work with your life. And that you, that has not stopped. At 70 years old, you're making your Broadway debut.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah, it is.
And the play is called Straight White Men?
The play is called Straight White Men, obviously. I don't have the title role.
Is it a trans role?
Yeah, it's a surprise. It's a small part. There are two trans people in the play, Ty Defoe and myself. We set the framework for the play.
Ah.
So the play is set within a trans frame.
Can I ask a question that is simple, but I'm not, that I would like to ask?
Please.
Just because I think the gender is so complicated, but oftentimes we look for the most complicated answer when it is simple. And I wonder, you transitioned many years ago in the binary sense, from male to female. Had you not done that, do you think you would have been able to say as definitively as you did, I'm not a man and I'm not a woman?
I've thought about that. You think about what if. In my day, people hadn't, if I had not physically transitioned, but instead, and when I say physically, I mean hormonally and surgically, but if I started living as a woman? Okay, here's the thing. To make that question make sense, gender expression and gender identity, two totally different things.
Yeah.
My gender identity, not man, not woman. My gender expression, pretty girl. I like being pretty. I like being sexy. It's just so satisfying. I like to make people smile. I like to make people wink at me. I think that's just wonderful. And I can still do it as a cute little old lady. But if I had gone for my gender expression in the 80s, the only place for me, and this is where class enters into gender, would have been on the street. No job. Remember, that still comes down to non-binary folks, visibly non-binary. Okay, queer and straight. Queer, gender fuckers, gender queer. Straight, non-binary. I'm non-binary. I'm not genderqueer. I'm not visibly trying to mess up the signals because my gender expression is girl. Love it. So because I was coming out of the middle class, I was living as an actor and scene designer and telemarketer at the time when I went through with my transition, and phone sex operator, I would have been able to continue working at phone sex. But that really didn't pay the rent. You know, I was running up credit cards in those days. And telemarketing, yeah. But even telemarketing, It was hard to go and find a job looking like not man, not woman.
And I ask that really because nowadays there are people in the media, you can find other non-binary people, and we know that that is an option. But back then, it was like, I'm not man, I'm not woman. I think like my response would have been like, that's not a choice you have, you know?
Yeah.
So to be able to think that and claim that to me is rather remarkable back then.
Back then, the question was, the response was, that's not a choice. But the question was, well, then what are you? And I'd say, I'm not man, not woman. No, but then what are you? I'm not man, I'm not woman. And I remember I was out on college tour someplace in the Midwest, and a young man stood up, and we did this back and forth for 3 or 4 minutes. That's a long time. I'm not man, not woman. Well, what are you? I'm not man, not woman. That's got to be satisfying. And you say the future of gender is when that question can be, go, oh, okay. That's the future of gender. Not doesn't mean everybody is that. It just means, oh, I get it. Sure. No problem.
That is such a great place to leave it on. I have one more question, which is a simple one and involves a binary, actually, now that I think of it. In your documentary, you say that your name is Kate Bornstein and you say your name is Kate Bornstein. Is one correct?
No. Growing up, it was always, my father insisted on Bornstein. And my brother insisted, my older brother insisted on Bornstein. My mother and I would look at each other and go, whatever, just spell it right, dear. And that's how it is. Sometimes it comes out of my mouth, Bornstein. Sometimes it comes out of my mouth, Bornstein. I'm honestly unaware of it. And it does not matter to me. I do take offense when it's misspelled.
So Kate Bornstein, not man, not woman, not Bornstein, not Bornstein.
Bless your heart.
Thank you for doing this.
Thank you.
And that's our show. If you enjoyed the interview, please help us to spread the word. Text your friends, tweet about us, write an article, call your mom. All these things are great ways to help new people find our show. It is such a big help. Thank you for that. We are broadcasting from the Advocate Magazine studio in Los Angeles. The Advocate is the longest running LGBT news magazine in the country. It was founded in 1967, and that is 2 years before Stonewall, and we are very excited to partner with them. You can also check out their other podcast, The Advocates, as well as Pride.com's podcast, Work. Special thanks to our partners at Panoply, our old home after...
The Prison Radio Show is a twice-monthly news show on CKUT. The show seeks to confront the invisibility of prisons and prisoner struggles by focusing on the roots of incarceration, policing, and criminalization, and by challenging ideas about what prisons are and who ends up inside. We are dedicated to programming that is directly collaborative with people who are currently incarcerated. With that in mind, we would like to let you know that we have a phone line for prisoners and their outside supporters. In fact, we have 2 phone lines. You can call us Collect from Bordeaux Prison and Riviera de Prairie Prison by calling 514-876-3748. We also have a number for non-collect calls. That number is 438-337-8423. Feel free to call that number and leave a message for us with news to share on the show or an audio message for your loved ones inside.
The Association des Services de Réhabilitation Sociale du Québec is filing a class action suit. If you were strip searched between July 13th, 2006 and July 1st, 2011, if you were in one of the following facilities, Bordeaux, Rivière-des-Prairies, Roberval, Saint-Jérôme, or the male sector of Quebec City, you may be able to be part of this claim. For complete details, go to asrsq.ca/class action. That's asrsq.ca/class action. Claims must be filed before January 16th, 2022.
Sarah's excited to celebrate her birthday at a restaurant. She's thought about it all week. She invited her friends. She got a new dress. She went to the restaurant. She wasn't allowed in the restaurant. She had to put away her new dress. She couldn't see her friends. And she thought about it all week.
Don't wait until it hits you. Get vaccinated. A vaccination passport is now required to enter certain public spaces. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. No boundaries. Feel alive.
Welcome to Dragon Root Radio, Feminist Waves brought to you by CKUT and the Center for Gender Advocacy.
The Dragon Root Media Collective aims to bring you feminist content that challenges interlocking systems of oppression and makes space for voices systemically silenced. Dragon Root understands media as being inherently political and emphasizes media skill sharing as a form of resistance.
We meet every other Wednesday at 6 p.m. at the Center for Gender Advocacy and welcome anyone interested in learning or producing feminist media to join. No skills required.
Should it be a big deal that a black, queer, femme, body positive woman is on the cover of a yoga journal magazine? No, but is it? Yes, because we are literally in the desert trying to find any oasis of more people of color and representation.
Welcome to Dragon Root Radio. A few weeks ago on our show, we spoke with Asami Martins, who is the founder of Our Colorful Yoga, a BIPOC wellness community and initiative in Montreal. To continue these conversations, we reached out to a podcast called Yoga is Dead. Yoga is Dead is a podcast that explores power, privilege, fair pay, harassment,